Across the country, protesters angry at the recent grand jury decisions not to indict white police officers for the deaths of Eric Garner in New York City and Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, took to the streets again last night. In New York, May Heredia decried what she said were too many incidents of police use of force against African Americans.
I don't know that this one made me any angrier than the last 300 or so, so I don't know what to tell you. It's not that it made me angry, it's just that I think when it happens every time, it's just like reaffirmation that it's just not going to change unless we do something.
On NBC's Today Show today, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was asked what message protesters are trying to send him and other public officials. Here's what he said.
The message is that they believe we have a justice system that doesn't represent all the people in the country. And I think that is a much bigger problem. That's beyond Eric Garner. That's beyond Ferguson, Missouri. If people don't trust the justice system, you have a problem.
New York Congressman Peter King said the black community is, quote, not right to be upset about the decision not to indict the policeman whose chokehold takedown of Eric Garner led to Garner's death, because, according to King, the ruling would have been the same if the suspect had been white. But in Phoenix, Arizona, last night, protesters called attention to the shooting death of a black unarmed drug suspect by a white police officer this week. Meanwhile, in Chicago, protesters blocked Lakeshore Drive. In San Francisco, they blocked Market Street. And in Boston, a mostly white crowd of protesters also blocked roads and caused delays on the subway system. Fatoum Muhammad, an African-American Bostonian, described the scene.
Lately, there's been injustice of people of our color. There's an error in the system that we want to fix. Policing strategies in this country are completely in favor of one group and not the other, so we just want to fix that.
And this afternoon, a 130-mile march from Ferguson, Missouri, arrives in the Missouri state capital of Jefferson City.
Joining us now from New York is Khalil Gibran Muhammad. He's director of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture at New York Public Library. Khalil, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And you heard the tape there from all around the country. What does that say to you?
Well, it says to me that it's not just that we have the perception of injustice. We actually have injustice. People are losing their lives over instances that should be adjudicated in courts. There should be due process. This is exactly what the 14th Amendment exists for. So people are taking to the streets to articulate that there is wide-scale injustice across the United States of America.
Khalil, as we have heard all along from African Americans, from protesters, this is not something new. They are frustrated with a pattern of this kind of thing. Why do you think that it has really crystallized in the last several months since Ferguson and now with these other incidents into this national movement, into this national outrage over what has been going on, as many people would say, for a long time?
Well, I think that the fact that it continues, so first we need instances that produce the kind of injustice that we see. So people like Oscar Grant, who are shot in the back, apparently subdued, it is a so-called accident or tragic, becomes less important than the fact that people keep dying. Additionally, you have social media and you have video evidence of what appear to be completely unacceptable forms of brutality, such as the beating of a grandmother on the side of a California highway. So the fact that these things keep happening and that we have ubiquitous evidence of them, and the fact that social media like Twitter allow people to continuously propagate this information has motivated a lot of people to take to the streets in protests and demonstrations.
Well, speaking of social media, Khalil, you've written of this new social movement that's sort of taken place on places like Twitter, one for the 21st century, where, you know, that rallying cry from the 60s, Black Power, gives way to the Twitter hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, so three African-American women developed that hashtag in the wake of the instances of Trayvon Martin and later Michael Brown, to articulate a first principle, which seems to get lost in all of this, because ultimately the legal fictions of equality are what we debate in our courts, which is to say our laws say that police officers have a certain amount of discretion if they feel harm. But at some fundamental level, we have to ask the question time and time again, which this hashtag articulates, is do Black Lives Matter more than the fact of the legal possibility of extinguishing life out of a due process or out of fear by police officers.
Does the fact that we have a black president right now figure into how all of this is being handled and what we expect from our leader, our president in this country? How do you feel about that?
Well, there's no question that now that we're in 6 years of the Obama presidency, we have absolute dissonance between his symbolic success as the first African-American president and the on-the-ground reality of working-class black communities absolutely under siege by forms of policing that are ostensibly there to serve and protect the community but feel much more like occupying forces. And what is so deeply troubling about this is we know this from our history. We know that as early as 1935, a major report was produced out of a riot in Harlem, an urban uprising in the wake of a shooting, of an alleged shooting of a Puerto Rican youth. And out of that report, five recommendations were made in response to police showing too little regard for the human rights of African Americans, violating their fundamental rights as citizens, showing instances of prejudice against African Americans in places where white communities did not want them. The Kerner Commission then, 30 years later, echoed these same concerns and made reference to stop and frisk practices, the need for community policing. So the president himself, who is an incredibly educated man, who knows this history, seems not to draw upon these history lessons when he's facing what seems to be the continuing pattern of the articulation of policing, police officers, in fact, enforcing racial boundaries in the United States of America.
Well, let's just shift gears just a little bit because this topic is incredibly complex. One of the most prominent voices that we've seen lecturing African Americans, especially young men, Bill Cosby, who, as we know, his own reputation, we've seen it crumble. Some have claimed that Bill Cosby's sitcom is part of what made an Obama presidency possible. But what's happened with Cosby in the context of all these other things? What does that say to you?
Well, it says that, as Malcolm X once said, to great controversy, chickens sometimes come home to roost. In the case of Bill Cosby, clearly the allegations, the sustained allegations of sexual violation of women, also demonstrate that our legal processes are not the best guide of people's experiences. And so a man who also knows from real-world experience how difficult it is for African Americans en masse to live up to the fictions of a middle-class, upper-income life that was articulated in The Cosby Show seems to have fallen greatly from grace in the midst of his own behavior in the past. And the idea of a Cosby effect being linked to the president's own success demonstrates to me that the idea of a post-civil rights moment that produced symbolic change never reconciled with the economic inequality that we face in the United States of America.
Khalil Gibran Muhammad, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.